When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palullo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Palullo and at Josh Jordan 975. And in between our shows here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the Astros bats continue to scuffle on the road. The hand of fate has landed on the hand of Yordan. We'll talk about what that means for the team. And does this team have or need a familiar voice to impart some tough love? We have a guy in mind. So, gents, the Astros find themselves at the 500 mark again at 18-18, going 2-4 on the roadie. They are back at home in the friendly confines of Daikin to face the Reds and Royals on deck. And it has been friendlier at home in contrast to the past few seasons, 11-7 at home versus 7-11 on the road. Jeremy Peña, Jake Myers, Zach DiZinzo, and Isak Paredes are the only hitters on the team with an OPS above 700. The supposed cornerstones of the offense continue to struggle. In old Milwaukee, Altuve goes 2-for-12 with a walk and 0 RBI. Christian Walker's 3-for-12 with an RBI. Yiner Diaz, 3-for-13 with a couple RBI. And Yordan Alvarez is MIA as he makes his way onto the IL with hand inflammation. That news broke right as we published Monday's episode. Now, I feel like I ask the same questions week in, week out. It's usually something along the lines of concern levels for the offense versus the potential output and the pitching's ability to keep this team steady while they figure it out. We look back at last year and we go, well, this team was in a much worse position this time last season. Charlie, last season, you were the voice of reason during that awful start. You said, don't count them out. It was a long season. So now, how do you feel at this point, as we're a week into May, about this team's ability to figure things out and about how big of a loss Yordan is? We don't know what that looks like, the extent of that. And while he's not having a good season thus far, he at least posed some sort of threat to opposing pitchers.
As we talked about earlier in the week, without Yordan performing as we've come to expect from Yordan over the last four seasons, the Astros have no chance to have a big-time lineup. I mean, he's by far their most talented offensive player in the thick of what should be his prime. I mean, other than the Astros futzing around when discussing the health of their players, I hope that's what they did this time. And Yordan's hand had actually been bothering him for a longer period of time than when it was brought to our light when he sat out a game, a regularly scheduled off day against Detroit before an off day for the team. And then he misses the two games in Chicago. And then it turns out, oh, he has a muscle strain in his hand. Save the jokes. They're hoping he gets back early next week and that he gets back to being 2021 through 2024 Yordan and throw in rookie 2019 Yordan. Attendance is part of the grade and it has been a recurrent issue in his career. Though last season he played in a career high 147 games. The 2025 Yordan thus far, the Astros don't miss that guy because Yordan has stunk this season, right? He'd been one of the myriad problems in their lineup, but you expect him to round into form and that guy is indispensable. Yordan's not as good an offensive player as Shohei Ohtani. He's not as good an offensive player as regular season Aaron Judge. We're freaking close to so far 2025 Aaron Judge. But in terms of impact in the Astros lineup, it would be like taking Ohtani out of the Dodgers lineup, like taking Judge out of the Yankees lineup. Yordan's role and factor and importance, I don't think, can be overstated.
No. But what's interesting there with Yordan, there are only three players on the Astros that have a negative WAR this year. It's Yordan, Christian Walker, and Altuve. Imagine if that somebody told you that before the season started. I mean, just wrap your mind around that. What's interesting is at least now with Yordan and then with Walker with the oblique during spring training, we at least maybe have some injuries we can point to for what's going on here, but not with Altuve unless, you know, they're hiding something that's going on with him. So that would be my concern with Tuve, is it's just he started off actually pretty good, but it's been a really bad slump. You hope it's just not age catching up with him. And Brandon, you talked about the guys with OPSs over 700. Like Jorge Polanco is slugging over 700. That's the big difference between what they're doing with what Polanco's doing. Only three Astros have a higher OPS than Polanco has slugging percentage. That's how dire this is with the offense. I think with Yordan being out, there's no reason to me that Zach DiZenzo shouldn't be playing regularly in left field right now. Caratini's hitting 217. I know he got off to a hot start and he hits left-handed, but DiZenzo looks like he needs to be a regular guy in your lineup. You need to be playing him. I know, right-handed pitcher playing the matchups. This guy needs to play regularly. See what you have with him. Myers is playing well. He should play in center. Keep playing Cam Smith. He just needs experience in right field. Chaz McCormick is basically your designated bunter now. That's basically what his role is on the team. So this should be pretty easy. The rest of the lineup, every day I'd like to see a spot of pretty much put the same thing out there. Let Rodgers go out there and play a little more regularly, see if what, you know, is changing in his approach at the plate is actually going to pay off. His expected stats are pretty good, so we'll see if they pay off into his regular stats. So I think for now, a spot is stop tinkering with it. Let's just let these guys go out there and play. I thought it was interesting. Dana Brown was asked on the flagship just this week about what does the long term look like for Zach DiZenzo? Where do you see him playing in the next 5 years? And he said he sees him as a first baseman or a left fielder. Wow. Christian Walker, 3-year contract. Altuve, getting older. In 5 years, he'd be 40, maybe done with his contract. So if that's the case, let's get DiZenzo out in left field while Yordan is on the IL. And we've been talking about they're not giving Altuve enough days off. Well, DH him pretty much every day and give him a little more rest that way.
Yeah, in the case of Altuve, in looking for a glimmer of positive, he did not strike out in the Milwaukee series in 13 at-bats. And signs of Altuve decline, right? Always been a free swinger, but his rate of contact has really dropped off. He blew away his prior career worst in strikeouts last season with 119, even after not K-ing in Milwaukee. He's on pace for 130 this season. And all of the other offensive numbers with the strikeout numbers also, ugh. I mean, he's down to the low 250s in batting average, the OPS down to 662. And as discussed in last episode, the batting average has some dead weight with it because he's been caught stealing three times. Brandon, you alluded to another base running blunder in Milwaukee, thinking the ball had gotten farther away from the catcher than it did. Doesn't count as a caught stealing, but it's functionally the same. And you add it up, and that's why Altuve has been a negative player. No injury with him unless lung and tooth is something that can put you on the injured list, and that he still has played in all but one game so far this season is an Espada mistake, I think, in our collective estimation. One, Altuve is now 35 years old, and two, been a bad player so far this season. It's not suggesting sit him down for a week, but a day here or there beyond just DHing for a lighter load in a given day makes sense.
Josh brought up first base, and I still follow John Singleton's exploits post-Astros because I'm a fan of Singleton, the person, more than Singleton, the major leaguer. Now, Singleton was the Syracuse Mets home run leader for the month of April. Now, we know John's been a 4A player for most of his career, a guy that's too good for the minors, but just can't translate that up to the bigs. But last year, Big John had a .234 batting average and a .707 OPS, which is not great, but it's also not terrible. Now, we know Christian Walker is a much, much better defender at first base, but from an offensive and payroll standpoint, would Houston be drastically in a different situation running out Big John at first base versus Christian Walker?
Well, payroll standpoint, they'd be $19 million better off, right? Singleton would make about $1 million. Christian Walker's at $20 million. Singleton, look, his numbers last year were, frankly, he was over his head for all of his major league career. But what he did in 2024 statistically profiled as fine as a platoon player. It was a 7.75 OPS, actually, against right-handed pitching. Against lefty, he's a joke. We'll never play him against lefties. But they honestly believe that he would not replicate 234 and 7.75 or keeping him in a platoon. We discussed in the offseason, not really anticipating a $20 million dive-in on Christian Walker, that Caratini or Diaz could be a right-handed hitting part of a platoon with Singleton if that was a spot where they wanted to economize on the dollars. But to their credit, Jim Crane signed off on a $20 million player. Blessing, curse, right? To this point, curse! Another way overpaid aging first baseman. But it was a very reasonable sign at the time. The last 3 years, Walker had been a very solid, productive offensive player. And we can't understate the defensive value. It's why Christian Walker, as much of a bum as he's been in the batter's box overall, he's still been a slightly a positive war player, whereas Singleton, even with the hitting numbers, defensively he was bad, and that's why he was barely above zero in war last year, even with an OPS about 100 points higher than where Walker is so far this season.
See, I'm kind of the other way on giving him credit for paying Walker. To me, that was just a way to cheap out on not paying Bregman and trading Kyle Tucker. To me, that was just Crane like, oh, let's play to the fan base and show them we're going to spend some money so we can let Bregman walk and go be an MVP candidate and trade away Tucker to go be another MVP candidate to bring Christian Walker in here and pay him $20 million a year. And we look like the big hero. They're going out to give the offense some juice. When in reality, Walker has a worse batting average on base percentage, slugging, and OPS than John Singleton did the last year. So to me, I'm not giving a lot of credit there. I have been pretty hard on Christian Walker, but I'm just tired of hearing the narrative from the fans and the media about this zombie lie. A zombie lie is a lie that refuses to die when disproved by facts, that he's a slow starter and that's why he's struggling so much right now. When last year, batting average 283 in March and April, OPS of almost 900. You go the year before that, batting average around 250, OPS was still at least over 700, and sure, he got a little better as the year went on, but point being, it was never this bad when we're talking about slow starter. So that's not really a thing. I think it's joining a new team. I think it's maybe that oblique has been bothering him a little bit more than he's let on. Something's going on there. But so far, it's been a terrible move bringing in Christian Walker. I like the defense and all, but you could have Yuli play defense and hit 200 for you. Maybe not. Maybe 200's a little too much to ask of Yuli these days. But point being, it's been a huge swing and a miss. And it's just right after the Abreu thing. It's like they didn't learn their lesson here. They went the cheaper route. And when you go the cheaper route, sometimes you don't get the better results. And it's pretty interesting that as soon as Kyle Tucker and Bregman get out of here, they go bananas.
Yeah, there's a difference between slow start and god-awful. And Christian Walker's first quarter of the season offensively has been god-awful, which with unfortunate company in the Astros lineup. I will say that obviously Alex Bregman has been spectacular so far for the Red Sox. I see no reason to believe that he would have done that here if the Astros had gone way above the 6-156. Very reasonable offer they made him, and it took to February for Bregman to get the Red Sox to creatively come in way over the top in annual salary anyway, right? Bregman year after year here, very slow starter. I think rejuvenated, insulted, challenged, motivated, refreshed by going to a new situation has really sparked him, along with fitting in very well at the top of a potent Red Sox lineup, and Fenway Park plays well to him. But Bregman's been awesome. Best third baseman in baseball so far this season, without a doubt. Kyle Tucker's cooled off some after a magnificent start. But remember, Kyle Tucker was tremendous here last season before the injury. So there's no surprise with Kyle Tucker's rate of performance. They were just scared to go long-term to pay a guy through the heart of his prime. That's one that you can really question. And Tucker ties in with the Yordan injury, something that we all knew was an issue with his Astros lineup with Yordan in it. Lopsidedly left-handed. Now without Yordan, unless Caratini's in there for some reason, you have nothing, and that's going to remain an issue that holds this lineup down from probably having a fair shot to be top tier. And if you want to have some rearview mirror regret, left-handed hitting outfielder, a guy named Willier Abreu, going crazy next to Bregman in that Red Sox lineup. 25-year-old left-handed hitting outfielder. The Astros traded him in 2022 for Christian Vasquez, who didn't hit worth a lick here, had a hit here or there, and then caught nothing but shutouts in the postseason, including the no-hitter against the Phillies. But that was a brief rental of a guy who since then has done nothing since going to the Twins. But Willier Abreu is off to a start after being on Rookie of the Year ballots last season. He's going to be an all-star candidate this season with the Red Sox. And man, a 25-year-old cheap left-handed hitting outfielder, the stuff of Jim Crane's dreams. But they dealt him because at the time they're probably thinking, Kyle Tucker is an Astro for life. And in their system, they had Pedro Leon, a great prospect. They just drafted Drew Gilbert. Prospects are suspect until they become reality as big leaguers. And on that subject, Joey Loperfido's hitting about 250 in AAA. Will Wagner's not even hitting 200 in the major leagues. And Jake Bloss has an ERA over 9 in the minors in the Blue Jays organization.
Yes, but speaking of rearview regret, Drew Gilbert's hitting 286 with an 868 OPS. So just keeping that in mind. And I agree with you, Charlie. There's no reason to think that Bregman would do what he's doing right now here. You brought up Christian Walker having a down season after three productive ones. Before him, Abreu's career hit a wall when he got to Houston. There aren't any hitters in recent memory, and Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, who once they've gotten to Houston have done better offensively. They either continue on the path or they hit a wall. And conversely, the opposite is true of pitchers. There are numerous examples of guys who come here and the Astros adjust their pitch usage and they become better pitchers. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends in the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is in our description. Now, speaking of struggling hitters, we talked about Altuve continuing to make ill-advised decisions at the plate and on the base path. Who could be a person who could talk to Altuve was something we talked about, I believe, on Monday's episode. Who has an authority or an authoritative voice in the room who Altuve would respect and take that to heart? And we talked about how the attrition of talent, some of these larger tent poles that were from their championship run, the absence of them would lend itself to there being less people who would have the voice that could carry the gravitas to appeal to or reach a guy like Altuve. We've seen a lot of comments on our videos, and I've seen them on social media as well, talking about Michael Brantley. Should the Astros look at bringing in someone like Michael Brantley? Not as a hitting coach, obviously. They respect Cintron and Snitker. That's a drinking game, I think, on our comment section, too. Every time we bring them up, you take a shot. But Brantley's been a guy who has been through the trenches with them, was an incredible hitter in his career, aged gracefully in the game outside of, you know, he struggled with injuries more than anything else. And just from a standpoint of helping guide these hitters, especially for a guy like Altuve, who maybe Father Time is catching up with him, maybe he can convince him that playing smarter can help ease the transition in what appears to be the back end of Jose's career. What do you think about Brantley?
Well, issue one is, Brantley have any interest in the job other than a phone call, a convenient trip into town? Akeem Olajuwon has done occasional work with Alperin Şengün and then contract work. Heard $100,000 for like a 3-day tutorial from Dream with some players around the NBA, going back to Kobe Bryant and LeBron have done sessions with Akeem. I think Brantley's loving life on the golf course and he has school age kids. So other than an out of the blue, hey, Jose, how's it going? And while I'm on the line with you, what's the deal with chasing pitches 2 feet off the plate? You know, it's a challenging life career tradition for Altuve. Old dog to learn new tricks when he's been such a master of so many tricks, including going after balls out of the zone. You know, Vladimir Guerrero was famous for being able to hit pitches that would bounce or be over his head. Now, we didn't see all Vlad's at bats as his career tapered off, but I bet he wasn't as good as that near the end. So can Altuve develop a little more patience or judgment? You know, is he looking at it? It's just a slump. It's a slow start. I'll round it into form because, hey, I'm Jose Altuve versus, I'm a little jumpier at the plate because to catch up with premium fastballs, I need to start a little sooner, which makes me even more vulnerable to the breaking stuff. If I'm starting my swing and it's a sweeper or a cutter moving away. So, you know, the worst case scenario is that it's just the slide. I mean, you go back and look at the history of great second basemen. We don't need to go very far. Craig Biggio's last premium season, he was, I believe, age 33. Altuve's 35. And, you know, we're not in an era where guys get better in their mid and late 30s, at least very, very rare exceptions, as opposed to, you know, the hardcore steroid era where primes were being extended into previously uncharted territory. So this is a tough one, but I will again throw into the pot the idea that he's on pace to play 160 games is just silly.
Yeah, what are they doing? I will say this. I think Brantley would be the perfect guy, Brandon, but like Charlie mentioned, is that something he's going to want to do? Is he going to want to be around the team that much? It doesn't have to be a full-time role, but, you know, he's got to want to be here. And I think the Astros, if you ask them, they'd be like, well, we have Biggio around the team all the time. We have Bagwell around the team all the time. Those guys have plenty of experience on what it feels like to fall off as an elite player as you age a little bit. So you would think that, you know, maybe Altuve could lean on those guys. And with the hitting coaches, that they seem happy with them. And let's face it, I don't think Jim Crane's getting rid of anybody that still has money left on their contract. So they're sticking around. And is Crane even going to want to pay somebody to come in and do something like that when he does have Bagwell and Biggio hanging around the team?
I think the Hakeem example is a good one with the Rockets because they bring him around, not a full-time job, but just as a mentor to some of the guys and impart some of that knowledge. I think that would be a great role for Brantley. I mean, obviously he has to have interest in it. And as you guys have both mentioned, whether Jim Crane has any appetite for spending any additional money for someone to be an extra voice in the room. But I want to stick to Altuve because I think we were all happy when Altuve got that extension, the idea of Altuve being an Astro for life. But I wonder from a team building standpoint, if we knew that the front office really had no intention of bringing back Bregman or keeping Tucker, who are now having great seasons outside of here. I really wonder if we knew the team wasn't really going to do anything of substance, at least at this point, to replace them. Would we be as excited about that deal for Altuve?
Probably not, but this is the most iconic player in Astros history, right? It's a different argument, the greatest player in Astros history. Frankly, Jeff Bagwell quite clearly was a better offensive player, but Jose Altuve is also Mr. October in Astros history, and we know about Bagwell's postseason resume. So Altuve, a very special case. Jim Crane clearly viewed him that way. They know 3,000 and the marketing potential to that. It predates Crane's ownership, but I mean, the Astros milked Biggio 3,000 for all it was worth back in 2007. Meanwhile, the team was in a state of decay, right? You hope that's not where it is with Altuve. And while they front-loaded the cash on the barrelhead, he's going to count $25 million toward the tax computations each of the five seasons of this contract. So unless there's a tectonic plate shift in the next CBA that the salary cap tax, whatever you want to call it, goes way up or the dynamics of a change, right, $25 million a year, that's counting for Altuve. But relative to Crane and the Astros moving forward nearer than over these next four seasons, Abreu 19.5 off the books after the season. Montero 8.5 when we take the Atlanta element out. Presley 5.5. So that's over $30 million there. If they know they're not going to bid in the deep end with Fromber, he's making $18 million this year. Well, that nicks them or ticks them over $50 million in money to play with. Now, some of that is going to be consumed salary arbitration raises. Jeremy Peña, Brian Abreu, Jake Myers, Hunter Brown for the first time. Still, even allowing for all that, they'll net about $30 million of payroll flexibility with which they're going to need to aggressively upgrade this roster because so much of this circles back to the farm system stinks. And a little amplification to that as we do this edition, heading into Thursday play, Sugarland's entire team batting average is 203. Corpus Christi, AA, The entire team batting average is 196. They named Shea Whitcomb their upper-level minor leagues player of the month for April. He turns 27. He's not a prospect. Bryce Matthews, 44 strikeouts in about 120 at-bats, hitting an even 200. He's nowhere close. At Double A, they have two guys younger than 23 years old. Right? If you're 24 years old in Double A, you're not a prospect unless it's because you've had huge injury problems to set your career back. The only young prospect by age guys at Double A are batting 139 and 149. It's just very bleak in terms of where you see offensive hope coming along in this minor league system. And, you know, the backbone of the glory era for the Astros was Correa and Bregman, and before them, Altuve and Springer. And anyone who you could conceivably be approaching any of those guys as the next wave of talent rising in the minors. What did I say? Altuve, Correa, Springer, Bregman? No, 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 and no.
Bottom line, this goes back to what we talked about earlier. Is they are terrible drafting offense. They are terrible developing offense. It's very clear that they can do a lot with different pitchers. And then they go other places, and sometimes they don't perform as well. You saw Gerrit Cole continue. Kikuchi hasn't quite been what he was here. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. But that's a big blind spot for them, is hitting and developing it and drafting it. They have just continued to miss. And Bryce Matthews, they brought in Dana Brown to try and correct this. Bryce Matthews, that's not looking like a hit so far. It's not looking like it's getting any better. And back to Altuve, I think part of the reason Crane did it was they got a hometown discount. That guy loves him a discount on some players. That's why he signed Yordan early and Bregman early and all these other guys. And that's all well and good. I like a good bargain too. But at the end of the day, you could have had Bregman for less than Altuve, even though it would have been for less years. It would have been 120 for 3 years of Bregman in his early 30s. The Altuve contract is the thing they hate the most. Paying somebody in their mid-30s, correct me if I'm wrong, Charlie, that extension starts this year when Altuve's 35. They don't usually give guys five-year deals when they're in their starting in their mid-30s. That's not an Astros-type deal. They made the exception for Tuve, but to make up for that, they let Bregman and Tucker go. So that didn't make the team any better, especially going forward. And Christian Walker, God, we'll see. We hope he's better than this, but it's really concerning right now. And with nothing in the farm system, I don't see how the offense gets much better. Even if you say you do spend a bunch of that money in the offseason, what all-star caliber type player are you getting in free agency where you're not going to have to pay $200 million to, which they pretty much refuse to do? I don't see how it gets any better. They refuse to adapt to the way free agency works now.
I do want to, if defend Crane is the right way to put it, their offer to Bregman, to me, was just fine. $26 million per year. The Red Sox contract, if the Astros had offered that to Bregman, they would have blown through two tax thresholds, and the Bregman deal would have cost them more than $50 million for this season. Bregman's off to an awesome start. When we talked about it, he probably wouldn't be off to the same start if he were with the Astros. Isak Paredes, he's no Alex Bregman so far this season, but he's pretty much performed at the level you would hope to get from him. So I'm not going to say they dropped the ball in not just shattering a couple of tax ceiling thresholds on Bregman. But in the end, if you are what your record says you are, you know, they're a 500 team as we creep toward mid-May with an offense that certainly without Yordan getting going is probably going to remain middle of the pack. And yeah, they're right about average now and runs scored per game. But we're also not yet through 40 games where that 14-run game against the Angels and a 9-1 blowout Wednesday against Milwaukee can still skew the numbers a little bit more than they will over 162 games.
As I'm hearing you play devil's advocate for Crane, part of that inflexibility, though, is self-imposed. They have spent money, as you've pointed out numerous times, but more accurately, they've misspent money. They've put it in the wrong areas that have basically been a net zero for them. You brought up the chunk of salary that falls off the books during this offseason, and this season has been about getting under the CBT. Charlie, use the term aggressive upgrades. How much will we be able to tell about Jim Crane's appetite for winning during this next offseason and what he does with that reallocation of those funds?
I think Jim Crane has a good side of ego that he loves to win so that he can brag on the golf course or at the yacht club or wherever about, look at my franchise and all they've accomplished in this era with payrolls that regularly have been in the top 10. And again, this season, it's through some bad contracts and misfortune as well. They're in the top 10 this year. So it's not like it's a slash and burn operation, but they're paying the price for their contractual sins with some reset this season. And yes, it is a self-imposed cap because it's a tax. It's not a cap. And as we've discussed going back a good while, you know, you can go with the macro argument to Jim Crane that, look, the net value of the franchise is quadrupled to quintupled since you bought it. So to haggle over $10, $15 million difference, $20 million difference in operating income, profit in a given year or two, really? If you're truly trying to milk every last drop out of this era and absolutely maximize being in contention with the window open every year you're in charge, he's open to that criticism, no doubt about it. But I don't think there's an absolute fairness to the idea that Jim Crane's gone tightwad and that's why the Astros are sinking. Their payroll is about $80 million higher than the Seattle Mariners this season.
It's where they spend it. Instead of spending $95 million on a closer, when you look at teams like the Tigers that just bring in guy after guy that can throw 100 miles an hour in their bullpen, I feel like you can find closers. Brian Abreu could be your closer on this team. You could spend your money over on the offense. And to my point, Willy Adames got $182 million this offseason, a 7-year deal. We've never seen Crane do anything like that. And that's not like you're going out and getting Juan Soto or somebody like that. They need another all-star on this team that can hit. I don't see them having that in their budget, or at least being willing to have that in their budget the way they do business right now. That's my big concern.
While I am critical of Jim Crane in certain parts, he has been and is the best owner this city has ever seen. That title was previously held by Les Alexander. But similarly, when Les won his championships, his appetite for winning seemingly diminished a little bit because he'd already accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. He's got his chips. He's got an inflated valuation on his franchise. That's why I bring up the question, because I am very curious to see how shrewd and cutthroat is Jim Crane going to be in this offseason. Does he want to reallocate those funds and rebuild this franchise to be in another aggressive winner again? Or is he fine with the fact that I know this franchise is worth billions of dollars now? I can flip it, get a profit out of it, and do what any accomplished business owner does, which is flip something for more value than it was worth when he bought it. One last reminder, if you listen on podcasts and apps like Apple or Spotify, please consider giving us a 5-star rating. Next scheduled episode drops on Monday, so make sure you're subscribed to this channel. We also drop emergency episodes as news breaks, so make sure your notifications are on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon, saying so long, and until next time. Go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.